Episode 1566, My Strength is My Story with Brenda Hare. Save the butter tubs.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a
stop sign. Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. We have with us an author, speaker, coach, Brenda Hare. She's got a brand new book out. Are you ready to butter some bread? Okay, we're not talking about buttering bread, but we are talking about discovering your worth. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Brenda's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy, Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, Brenda and I had a wonderful time. She is a very energetic woman, and you are going to fall in love with her story about her grandmother, the legacy that her grandma left. Discovering your worth in a disposable world. Have you ever felt like you're just not good enough? That, come on, what if ordinary could be extraordinary? What is it that you want different in your life? You are going to be encouraged and inspired today, empowered to go out and conquer the world that you touch. So without further ado, let's welcome in Brenda Hare, Save the Butter Tubs. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I'm so excited. This is my favorite series, My Strength is My Story. And we have with us Brenda Hare. She is a wife of 20 years, mom to three beautiful children, and grandma to little Hayes. Plus, they have a little Jack Russell, Maggie. Oh, we got to talk about Maggie. She's a military veteran who loves hiking and chasing waterfalls. Brenda is a speaker, coach, and torchbearer with a deep passion to help others find clarity to make every day matter. She is also an author, releasing her newest book, Save the Butter Tubs, Discover Your Worth in a Disposable World. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. Brenda, it's so good to have you here. And guess what? I brought my butter tub. We're going to fill it up today.
I love it. Love it.
Oh, I cannot wait. Well, I am so glad that you're here. And I know you have a lot going on in your life. And anytime an author takes a time out to actually speak to their audience, it's just such an honor and a privilege to actually hear the words from you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I do have a lot going on, but you know, I wrote the book to reach my audience and I really want, my heart is to connect with them. And there's a part in the book and you've read it. So I'm sure this jumps out and maybe I hope I don't spoil anything if you've got it marked, but, where I talk about, it's not enough that I share my own light, but that my purpose is to help others share their light. And so I feel like doing interviews gives me the opportunity to really hit home and really connect with my readers and hopefully turn on some light bulbs here and there.
Amen. Well, I have to ask you, what brings you joy?
What brings me the greatest joy is actually writing. When I write and I'm in that, I call it the God zone. It's like almost like an out of body experience. You know, it's such a deep connection. It brings me great joy. The other thing is my family, of course. You mentioned we have a beautiful blended family, and I love my little grandson. We just got to spend some time with him last night because we'll be traveling soon, and so we went to see him, and oh my goodness, he's just the sweetest little thing. He's learned to kiss. He's a year old now, and he's learned to kiss, but you know how babies kiss, with their mouth, just they're like, they go all in, complete slobber kiss, which is adorable. But yeah, my family brings me great joy.
Oh, well, that is so beautiful. Well, what was it like, speaking of being little, what was it like for little Brenda growing up?
Ooh, that's a good question. So outside of the book, I don't have a whole lot of childhood memories. I, for some reason, don't have a lot of childhood memories. I have a pretty poor memory. I guess that's why I'm a writer. I write everything down so I don't forget. And my husband and I often joke that someday he'll be reading The Notebook back to me. So that, you know, reading our love story back. But I do, I have a pretty poor memory. And so as a child, before my parents got divorced, my parents divorced when I was 9. And before that, it was a lot of mud pies and, you know, playing in the backyard. And it was a different time then. So we were the kids that played until the light street light came on. And, you know, that was our signal to come home. So a lot of joy and outside time when we were, you know, before that age. And then at nine, kind of everything kind of crumbled in, you know, after my parents got divorced, and we spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house. And so she kept us all summer while my parents worked. That's kind of where the book picks up, you know, cleaning her house all summer long.
Well, how much fun was it to spend, you know, with your grandma?
The funny part is, at the time, we felt like we were the reason, like, they were inventing labor laws, because we were literally, like, you know, we called her Sergeant Grandma behind her back and things like that, because, you know, we'd wake up in the morning, she'd, you know, have breakfast out, and she was so sweet. She would pour the milk in a little pitcher and set it on the counter, a little small pitcher, because the gallon was too big for us to, you know, she was afraid we'd spill it. It was too big for us to manage. And so she'd make our, you know, put the milk out on the counter and have our cereal. And then it was chore time. And she is, you know, I look back and I just think how wise of a woman she actually was. You know, she had, like, every day planned out. Like, today we're taking down all the curtains in the entire house and we're going to wash them all. And I don't remember ironing them. Maybe it's because I didn't, my sister did, but she said we ironed them as well and hung them back. So, and while the curtains were off the windows, you had to clean all the windows with vinegar and newspaper. So that was a lot of the memory. So it was, while there was joy there, and her house was beautiful for its time, there was a lot of joy spending time in her home and with her. It wasn't as fun as it, you know, at the time, because we were like, oh, chores, you know. But now looking back, it's the most precious time. And I'm so thankful that she taught me all the things she did and we were able to spend that time together. But at the time, I was probably ready to escape.
You wanted to run away and hide from Grandma, Sergeant Grandma.
Yeah, Sergeant Grandma.
Well, your book is a compilation of biography, memoir, and self-help.
Yes, it is.
Explain to how that all comes together, because some people would say, I just don't get this. It's got to be one or the other, right? But it's not.
It's not at all. Yeah. And I even joke that there's a little Texas history thrown in as well. So there's a little bit of it all happening. So how it started was I felt called to write back in 2003 and started working on some different projects and met with a publisher. And they told me pretty much flat out that I was a nobody and to come back when I was a somebody. They told me that they loved my work. They loved my titles and I had presented manuscripts. I said that they loved it, but that I had no platform. And this was back in 2006, before Facebook even existed. So it was back in the MySpace days, which most people were teenagers using MySpace. Most adults weren't using it. And so it was like, what did they mean by platform? And how do I do this? And so I was very kind of thrown back and stopped writing. I say I stopped, but a writer, I don't think ever really stops. You know, we're always taking notes here and there. And so then when my grandmother asked me to write the story of her life and she had already started, I felt like, okay, this is an honor and a privilege. And so I'll take this on. And I just saw God marry the two stories. It was like, wait a minute, your story is her story and her story is your story. And so it's really her story presenting how she always knew her worth, even through all of her struggles, and me kind of discovering mine and figuring it out. And so it's a good marriage in that aspect. And so I tell the story of you know, our childhood with her, and I tell the story of her passing, unfortunately, before the book came out. But so there's a little storytelling in there, but there's a little lessons in there too. I really want people to understand what it is they need to get out of their life, what they need to trash, what they should be focusing on and treasuring in order to transform their life and their legacy, because we're all leaving a legacy, whether we realize it or not. You know, every choice we make is making an impact on people. It's just, which kind of impact are we trying to make?
You know, having that point that we all have worth, and a lot of us, unfortunately, you know, we answer, hey, how are you? I'm just busy. I'm busy. That word is like the new I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And we don't even know what that means. Like, what does it mean to be busy? I don't know. I'm just doing stuff. Little do we know, though, that we're leaving an imprint everywhere we go. And it's not just because of our fingerprints, but it's because of our words, our actions, and how we live. Well, in your book, you wrote, and this is in chapter 2, I was writing from my circumstances, not trying to create a story that reads better than real life. What story, Brenda, did you write about that actually read better than real life?
Well, you know, there's a saying, and it's funny as a speaker to admit this, but sometimes I feel like I speak better in my writing than I do in my speaking. And like I said before, it kind of takes you to, because I'm in that God zone. And so it's coming from a deeper place sometimes than when I'm just trying to think of words to say. And so I think a lot of the stories in the book, a funny one would be the triathlon story. That definitely reads better than it happened in real life. It's a lot funnier now than it was then. And it feels a lot better today than it did that day. But yeah, there's a lot of stories in there that just read better. And I think a lot of that comes just in life in general. When we reflect back, I don't think we spend enough time really soaking in the presence of the moments that we're living. And so when we reflect back, the stories usually are better. Even the bad stories, because there's lessons there, right? We learn those lessons. And so even the bad stories, the things that we think, oh, you know, this happened or that happened, we can look back and think, you know, there's a lesson there, and that's a good thing.
I love those lessons. All to fill up our little butter tubs. We've got to fill them up. Y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Save the Butter Tubs, Discover Your Worth in a Disposable World. Well, Brenda, you continue to write in your book about these five lies. And in the one that you title Lies We Buy, you say, and I quote, "Do you find yourself in a cluttered space, mind, or life? External clutter is internal clutter on display. What was one area in your life that needed to be decluttered?"
Ooh, there's still areas. You know, I write about that closet in there in chapter one in the creative avoidance area. And so my husband would definitely say that my closet, that closet that I was supposed to clean out, it still has some issues. I have a great capsule wardrobe, and I write about that in the book as well, which is fun and fabulous, and it's freed up a lot of space in my closet. Still have a lot of things in there that I'm holding on to that I shouldn't be. You know, there's shoes in there that I haven't worn in years, but I'm like, well, if I ever go to this event again, I may need to have that. And so there, those kind of things I still hang on to a little bit, and I could part with a few, that's for sure. Yeah, that's an area of clutter for me, is for sure. I try really hard to let go of things. And some days I'm really good. Some days I'm like, I'm ready, let's go. My husband and I went out to the shed a few days ago, and he was like, I have some things I want to ask you about. I'm like, yep, get rid of it. He's like freaking out, like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm in the mood, let's go. He's like, let's get the whole house done. I'm like, no, not that much.
I'm not that much of the mood, hun. You know, we got to draw a line somewhere.
Exactly. But you know, it is freeing. And I really believe, and I'm working on it now. In fact, my office, the colors in my office here where I am are left over from my youngest daughter's seventh grade choices. So this was her room when she was in seventh grade, and we painted these crazy colors. And when I took over, I had no energy to repaint a whole room. And so I'm in the process of redoing my office. And so that'll be a good clutter clear out. But, you know, I think that clearing out clutter really comes from being very focused on what it is you're doing, what your calling is. And then it's easier to let go of the things that you no longer need. So like I no longer need pantyhose in my life, because I will never speak at an event where they require me to wear pantyhose. I don't need those anymore. I'm very clear on my calling.
I love it. And those are the most uncomfortable things. It had to have been a guy who invented them. I'm just saying.
Yes.
And it didn't do our legs any good, really. I mean, it gave us a little extra color, but that was about it.
Yes. In the meantime, it was cutting us in half. Yes.
And we'd have roles where we really didn't want them.
That's right.
But that's for another episode. We got to stick to our own rules here, you know, because we got to put some butter on it. I'm just saying, save the butter tubs. I just love it because my grandma, too, did a lot of saving of the butter tubs. In fact, she passed away in her early 90s. She was 93. And praise the Lord, my children were able to meet her and really get to know her. And that, you know, she played a very pivotal a part in their life and leaving a legacy. You write in your book about Grandma's secret to happiness, and you say it's simplicity. Mm-hmm. And that word, I mean, we're talking about clutter, right? Mm-hmm. Clutter is not simplicity.
No.
Decluttering gives us that freedom, and it almost brings about simplicity. How do you interject simplicity in your life?
Well, it really comes down to like what I was saying. My grandmother, the way she was able to do it was by knowing her calling, knowing what it was she was good at and what she was going to do every day, and then getting rid of anything that didn't align with that. And that's really what it comes down to, is if you want to have a simple life, figure out what it is you're meant to be doing. And that can be so many different things for so many people. And I talk about in the book that it's not some grand scheme that we're all trying to come up with. Some of it's very simple. Like, you're a mom. That's your job. You know, that's what you're called to do, is to be a good mom and to stay at home with your kids, homeschool them, whatever it is. I have a good friend that has 6 children that she homeschooled. Two of them are grown now, but she still has 4 at home homeschooling. That's her calling. So does she need pantyhose? Probably not, you know? And it's just things like that, that once we get really clear on the things that we need to do what we're called to do, we can get rid of all the other things. And that makes it really simple. It's kind of that, you know, that new Kumari method about, does this bring me joy? And it's kind of like, does this apply to my calling? Is this necessary to, you know, for my mission? If it's not, get rid of it.
Time to trash it.
Time to trash it. Time to pass it on to somebody else. And maybe it's for their calling.
That's right. Yeah. Because in someone else's trash is another person's treasure. And just like you say, you go from trash to treasure to transform. And I love how that just wraps around. You know, for the person there that's listening right now and watching, and they're saying, you know what, I hear of this calling, I hear of this purpose, but I don't really like know how to like figure it out. We could talk hours for how. I mean, that's not something we can, you know, dissect right now. But what would be a first step for someone to begin the process of figuring out their calling and purpose?
Well, let me tell you, when I was struggling for 15 years trying to figure mine, I read probably every book that was out there. And most of them tell you to go back to your childhood and imagine the things that you enjoyed and blah, 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 blah. Well, as we shared, I don't have a lot of good childhood memories. I don't have a lot of memories of my childhood. So for me, that was like, I don't know, playing lemon skip in the driveway. Like, what? Like, I don't know. And so what I really had to do was look at the jobs and the opportunities that I've had over the years and pick out the little things in there that really set me on fire, that really got me going, you know, that really brought me joy, as you talked about earlier. And then I was able to kind of piece things together and go, oh, this, my life could look like this. These are all the areas, all the little things I like. And if I could create a job around that, that would be it for me. And so between that and a lot of prayer and a lot of asking God, what am I supposed to do with my life? And how are you going to use all this mess that I've created to make some kind of message out of it? I would think, you know, that would be my first like assignment, I guess, is to, you know, look back over your life at the things you've done, whether it's a volunteer position, whether it's, you know, being a mom, an actual job that you've held, look at those things and say, okay, what did I enjoy about each part of it? Because, you know, as a mom, I'll be honest, I did not enjoy staying home with my kids. That was not my thing, not my thing. I enjoy taking my kids on adventures and showing them different things. I would love to travel. We'd love to take our kids traveling. I love to take my kids dancing and different things like that. But I'm not a stay at home. It's not happening. I'm homeschooling. Not going to happen in my life, not in my world. You know, kudos to those who can do that, but it just wasn't me. And so you have to pick the little parts, you know, that are you, and then you can start putting them together and it'll start developing and showing you. But it is a process. It's not something that you just, you know, I always thought about those people who knew from early on in life what they were going to be when they grew up. And I'm like, how come I don't know? You know? And it's a discovery. It really is just unpeeling back the layers of who people said you were and what you were supposed to be doing and what they expect of you, and honing in on the things that you really love and enjoy. And I think it'll come.
And it's such an adventure. You know, you get to look at those puzzle pieces and you're like, oh, I forgot that. Oh, I love this. Or wait, I hated that. Why am I even doing that? No wonder I'm miserable, or whatever the case may be. And I love that you say it is a process.
Yes.
This isn't an overnight. And I think when people compare themselves with the highlight reels on Instagram and Facebook, and now we've got live everything, right? You don't have to be anybody to be a somebody to have a live channel of some form or fashion. You can just get on and start talking about whatever you want to talk about. And yet people still sit there and they try to hold on to somebody else's coattails saying, I want what they have. And I think I match their worth, or I am like they are in their calling. Mm-hmm. And we get messed up when we do that.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? When you find what it is you're meant to do, it's so freeing, because then I was offered two jobs, actually a couple more than that, in the last year and a half since working on the book and really being focused on writing the book and, you know, bringing it out to the world. And I was able to turn those jobs down flat. Like, that's not what I'm supposed to do, because I know what I'm good at and that's not it. I know what I'm supposed to be doing and that's not it. One of them was working at a bank. They wanted me to be their branch manager or whatever. And I'm like, numbers? Like, did you miss the part about being an author? Like, that's not happening. And it's just funny that, you know, that's come up several times. It's like, that's not my thing. But once you know that, it's just so freeing. It really, really is.
And no comes easier, because you don't second guess yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Which, and you don't feel like I need to, you know, I tell people, when they first are trying to figure out what they're going to do and what their calling is, start serving, you know, start volunteering places, try different things. You know, if you're able to switch jobs, you know, if you're not happy and you're able to switch, which is funny. Not everybody's like that, but I've had almost 40 jobs in 46 years, all by choice. I've never been fired. Switch, you know, either taking a higher paycheck or trying something different. And if you can do that, fabulous, do it, because you'll learn what it is you like and don't like. But if you can't switch jobs, try some volunteer positions, you know, maybe try leading the youth at church, or leading the children, or working with adults, or go to the Salvation Army, or wherever. You try different things and see kind of what your niche is, who your people are, you know, who you feel more comfortable working with. For me, I can tell you it's not children of young age. Teenagers and up, I'm good, but I'm not a, you know, I say that, but like my grandbaby, I can't wait till he starts talking so he can, you know, I love the 2-year-old and 3-year-old stages, which most people don't. But I love the questions, like, why? I love that stage. So I'm looking forward to that, but he's my grandbaby. So that's different. I don't want your grandbaby.
That's right. Grandbabies are totally different. I don't have any yet, but I eventually will, I'm sure. And my mom's told me, she's like, oh, honey, it's awesome when you get to be a grandma. And I'm like, okay, but I'm not in a rush. And I tell my children all that all the time. Mama's not in a rush to be a grandma. Yeah.
We felt the same way. In fact, right up until he was born, we were like, people would ask us and we're like, we're not really excited about it. Like, we are finally empty nesters. We're not excited about, you know, having a grandbaby. And of course, watching there and being at his birth was life-changing. So glad to have you now.
Yeah. Little Hayes is going to be just an absolute blessing, I'm sure. Well, in your book, you talk about the trash to treasure to transform. I have to ask you this one, and it's kind of a flip here. What was the hardest thing you learned about yourself that you had to trash?
Ooh, the hardest thing I learned about myself. I think I'm still learning, to be honest. I'm working on my next book, and my next book I'll be touching on, you know, in Save the Butter Tubs, my grandmother didn't want me to focus on any of the negative of her life or even my own. And so I went through depression in 2006 to the point of having a suicidal plan. And I think it's time to share that story and to help people realize how they can move past that. And so I'm in the process of, you know, putting this piece together and how this is going to look like and titles and subtitles and all the things that go into a book. And God is revealing in me that I am still struggling with pride, which is something I never really thought I struggled with, because I'm pretty transparent and I like to own up to my own mistakes and flaws. And it's like, yeah, it's happened. Yeah, I did it, whatever. But I'm still concerned with what people will think about me. Or how I find myself still struggling to be enough and to I find myself trying to prove myself. So I've run, I share in the book about the triathlon, but I've also run 4 half marathons. And sometimes I find that I did it to prove that I could. And I'm looking back now thinking, who was I trying to prove that to? You know, was I trying to prove it to myself, or am I trying to prove it to other people that I can do this? And so he's still working on me. So I'm still learning some stuff to trash. And that'll be in the next book. Really, we're going to get real clear on our why we were created, why we're called, commanded, and commissioned. So it's really going to dive really deep into our walk. And I think it's going to be very freeing for a lot of people. But with Save the Butter Tubs, you know, the 5 lies there, I still struggle with creative avoidance. I find myself, you know, doing these little things here and there. In fact, we just did a 21-day fast at our church starting at the beginning of the month. And I actually fasted from watching television during the day. And I know that sounds like the craziest thing ever, but, and I wasn't watching daytime television because I don't even know what that consists of these days, but I would record, you know, the shows that I do watch in the evenings, and then I would watch them during the day. And I would watch it. I'd wake up in the morning and I drink kombucha in the morning, which is fermented tea for those that don't know. And I would have my tea and I would watch whatever I had recorded from the night before or previous nights. And then sometimes it would turn into this creative avoidance where I would just, oh, well, let's just watch another show and another show. And then before I knew it, it was lunchtime. And I was like, well, I'm going to make lunch. So I might as well watch TV while I'm having lunch. And then, you know, the whole day gets away from you because you're creatively avoiding sitting down at the computer and working. So creative avoidance is probably something I still struggle with. And I think a lot of people do. I think with creative avoidance, giving it a name, most people aren't familiar with the term creative avoidance, but it's worse than procrastination to me, because procrastination is something that you're going to eventually get to, like paying your taxes. You know, you have to pay your taxes. So you're going to do it eventually. You know, whether you filed an extension this past week or not, you know, you're going to get to it because you have to. With creative avoidance, you don't necessarily have to get there. And so it's really something that we know we should be doing. We know we're drawn to, but the enemy is getting in the way, and we're allowing that to happen by creatively avoiding what we're called to be doing. So creative avoidance is still there for sure. I think because the enemy is always going to be there. We're always going to have that resistance. And so we're going to have to make that decision. Do we go this way or the right way? You know, do we make a decision to do what we're called to do, or do we slack off? And we all need rest days, don't get me wrong, but we need to decide, are we resting a little too much, or are we, you know, what are we doing here? So, yeah.
Well, y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Save the Butter Tubs, Discover Your Worth in a Disposable World. This is a great title. So I have to ask the basic of all basic questions. Where did this title come from?
Well, that's a great question. The title came to me long before I knew the real gist of the book and how it was going to come together. The title came to me when I was at my grandmother's home, and she was, you know, we were going over some things that she wanted included in the book. And I was sitting on her couch looking across into her kitchen, and I could see all her butter tubs stacked up on her counter. And I said to myself, that's the title of the book, Save the Butter Tubs, because something she always did, and it kind of encapsulated her mindset. And so as the book started to unfold, I was like, this is exactly what grandma represented, seeing the value in things that people throw away, including people, right? I mean, we've become a disposable society. If I don't like you anymore, I just get rid of you. I mean, I don't have to be your friend. You know, that's, we unfollow, we unfriend, we, you know, all of these things. And so rather than investing in and trusting each other and pouring our lives into each other. And so the title came then. Little did I know it would become a wonderful metaphor for my own life, and that ultimately I feel like I'm the butter tub that she saved. Because had she not asked me to write this book, I would probably still be a struggling author wondering if I was a nobody or if I was a somebody. And she made it very clear that, you know, even an empty vessel, someone who was broken down and felt like a nobody, has a purpose. And so that's where the title came from. And I love it. And I love that it resonates with so many people. I get often tagged in the memes on Facebook of, you know, which one's the butter and which one's the leftovers. You know, I get tagged in those memes and I just love it because every time it just takes me back to my grandmother and her, you know, truly seeing people for what they're worth. And I share a story in the book that I absolutely love and I'll never forget. At her memorial service, this gentleman rode his bicycle across town in San Antonio, Texas, which population at the time, like 1.5 million people. And it was dark and he rode his bicycle to the memorial service. And this gentleman's probably in his 70s. So as if that wasn't enough, I was like, what? You rode your bicycle here? And he was the dishwasher at a place that she was the cook. And the fact that she would show him so much respect and love that he would come to pay his respects to her meant so much to me. But that's how she was. There was nobody who was beneath her. You know, there's certainly employees that she taught, but she never looked at it as a, I'm better than you. It was like, come along, let me teach you what I know. And so she was a great guide in that way. And was to us as well, even though we called her Sergeant Grandma. I mean, she was trying to teach us the whole time. You know, she was teaching us valuable life lessons and life skills and making us the women we are today. You know, you shared earlier about your kids and the fact that they got to know your grandmother. And I love that because my youngest daughter, she's now a missionary. She's 18. And she'll often text me and say, I'm setting a table like grandma taught me to. And she's, you know, setting a formal place setting. And I just love that because at the time, you know, again, we go back to that time. My daughter's like, we're drinking out of water bottles. What do we need water glasses for? You know, I'm like, just put the glasses on the table. You don't have to pour your water in the glass. Just put it on the table. That's what I expected, a formal place setting. So
that is so beautiful. And those memories are, you know, you think back on them. I call them like tears of joy. They're the droplets of joy that at the time, like you said, no one wants Sergeant Grandma telling her what to do or telling him what to do, you know. And I can remember doing those chores. My grandpa was more of the sergeant at arms and would, you know, call me two things. But later on in life, when you look back, and I think as parents, it's so important that we remember that. Sometimes we're afraid to discipline for fear of, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not going to be my child's friend, quote unquote. But we really need that because when they look back, it will be those droplets of joy that we will have blessed them with. And as you term it, a legacy. Your grandmother left a legacy. What legacy, really, if you were to try to say, this is what I see as my grandma, what legacy did she leave you, Brenda?
I think it's summed up in Save the Butter Tubs that she saw the worth in everybody, everything had value. Nothing was disposable to her. And she only took into her home what she needed. She didn't live with an excess. She didn't see the need for an excess. She really knew her purpose and what needed to be done. And there wasn't a lot of room for extra clutter. And because of that, I think that helped her clearly see the value in things and people.
I wish I would have known your grandmother. She sounds like an absolutely beautiful woman with an extraordinary heart.
Thank you. That makes me cry. Thank you.
Seriously, you know, because my grandma, and I even had the privilege of knowing my great grandmoms, and mm-hmm. we don't talk about the generations before us. And I almost feel like we leave them behind. Yeah. And we forget how precious that they are. And technology, we look at technology and put it up and hold it up on a throne, and it won't even top butter. I mean, it tops butter, right? You know, the technology is all the way up here, and mm-hmm. and we think it's everything, but God created us for relationships. That's and I can right. just tell in your heart that even though it was Sergeant Grandma, she knew what she was doing, and she wanted you to know that you're worth saving. What a absolutely. Legacy to live and to leave. Yeah.
Absolutely. When you said you would love to know her, if my grandma was still here today and you were to come to her home, she would have set up a full spread for you, complete with a formal place setting. There would have been more than enough food, complete with a relish tray. There was always a relish tray involved. But she just welcomed people into her home. She had a hospitality like lived in her heart. I mean, she was always wanting people to feel welcome and loved. And that's how she served and loved people, was through her cooking. And so she would have done that. And I wish you would have got the chance to know her, but I'm so thankful that you got the chance to know her through the book. And you know, the book, some of the greatest feedback I've gotten has come from a friend of mine at church. Her and her 13-year-old daughter read the book together, and they took turns reading it out loud to each other. And the mother shared that it gave her an opportunity to share about her own grandmother, which was very impactful, that now this is opening up their legacy. And then after the book was finished, and if the daughter sees this interview, they're both going to kill me because I'm not supposed to share this, but the daughter said that she wanted to be my best friend at 13 years old. And that meant so much to me that this book had such an impact on her at such a young age, that she connected to the nuggets in there, the life lessons, you know, the God stories, that she could connect it at such that level. And what I would like for Save the Butter Tubs, and I'm so glad we're doing this right before Mother's Day, because what I'd really like is for more of that to happen. So Save the Butter Tubs is a great book for anyone. I have readers all the way from age 11, that's my youngest, up to 86 is my oldest reader that I'm aware of. And I have men read it, obviously, but it really touches a woman's heart because of that special, you know, grandmother, granddaughter relationship. But I think it would be a great book for mothers and daughters to read together, to do as a book club. You know, sisters could read it, aunts and cousins and things like that. So it's just a great book. It brings up a lot of family history for people to discuss, and, you know, a lot of memories. People share with me the memories of their own grandmothers and things like that. Even my editor, going through the process, her grandmother was passing away while she was editing my book. So the divine timing of her editing my story was so powerful. And of course, she messaged back and said, you know, I had no problem going through her home and deciding where things went because I had read your book and I knew what I needed to bring home and what I needed to leave behind. And it's such a powerful impact. And so I hope for Mother's Day, every mother that's listening will get a copy of this book and share it with their daughters, and that they'll go, you know, it would be a great Mother's Day gift either way. The mother could buy it for the daughter, or the daughter could buy it for the mother and our grandmother and share it. And, you know, it may open up an opportunity for people to collect writing from their own loved ones. And on my website, there's under resources, there's a free resource where people can share, figure out how to learn how to collect that information. I tried for years. In fact, I have one of these little books right here. I tried for years to get my grandma, you know, these little books she buy, and it's, you know, grandma, tell me your memories. And I couldn't get her to write in it at all to save my life. In fact, I have another one. Nothing's written in it. But when it was me handwriting the questions to her, or sitting down face to face asking her, the stories started to unfold. And so it just needs to be personal. Like you said, we're created for a relationship. We're not created to, you know, fill in the blanks and like this. So we're really created for a relationship. And so I hope people will take the time to do that with their own families, especially this Mother's Day.
Amen. And I would also extend that. Graduation's coming up. What a great gift for sending your daughter, especially out into the real world, to say, hey, you haven't gone far. You're worth something. You're worth saving. I love you for who you are. You don't have to prove anything to me. And it just opens up dialogue. Sometimes we're just so stuck using the same words. You know, I think about the word like. Like happened like years ago, like, see here, it drives me crazy because I get caught in it every once in a while, and I'm like, well, like, and then it's like, yeah. If we were to calculate what we say, we have a very small vocabulary, and yeah, we use the same words over and over and over again. And I know for you as a writer, you can't write over 60,000 words in a book with only a vocabulary of 20 words. It would be pretty boring, you know? Yes. So I just think, too, extending that Mother's Day into graduation, take it on a vacation and just sit there and dive in, and then go and take it and write your own and script it as to what you're doing and what you remember, because I'm telling you, life is too short. And for your editor to have gone through editing your book while her grandmother was passing, oh my gosh, you know, it really does bring back to reality what matters. And that, yes, I think, is honestly what I see in your book, is saying that you are worth something because you matter.
That's right. That is exactly right. And, you know, in sharing that for graduation, it's so important to me that part of my legacy is I want people to learn at an earlier age than I did what their worth is and what their, you know, where their value lies. And it's not in what they do or what they look like, it's who they were created to be. And if I can share that with, you know, people graduating from high school or college, that's huge. I have a funny story to share, and I'm going to tell on my daughter. I hope she doesn't mind, but my youngest daughter, she's a missionary, and she spent a lot of time with my grandmother, you know, her great grandmother. Because when we would travel back to San Antonio to visit, we live 5 hours away from there now, we would stay with her. And so she got to know her, and she, you know, learned how to set the place settings and all of that. And so when she knew I was writing the book, she kind of distanced herself a little bit. And then she was away on mission when the book came out. And so I messaged her and I said, I can, you know, send you a copy to open up on Kindle if you want to read it. And she says, okay. And so I sent it, and she replied back and she said, I am bawling and I'm not even through page two. You know, like, I can't do this. And because it was so personal and emotional for her. And so she came back from mission. She came home for a month or two and was headed back out. And of course she came home and I was so excited to sign her a copy, you know, and let her hold a copy in her hand. And she never read it when she was home. And I was like, And as a mom, you know, I'm kind of like, what's going on? Why isn't she reading it? And then there's, as an author, I'm going, what's going on? Why aren't you reading my book? And so anyway, she went away on mission and it came up and they asked if they could read it. And so she lent her copy to someone else. And when they read it and came back and were like, oh my goodness, I can't believe the stories your mom shares about you and the impact you had on her. And just, you know, on and on and on. And so it's kind of that reverse legacy. So then my daughter read it from cover to cover pretty quickly. And then she went out and got the butter tub that's on the book tattooed on her arm because she wants to share the story. And so she's been able to share the story with multiple people because of that tattoo. People have asked her, what is that? And she's able to, to share. This is, you're worth more. And she's, you know, lent the book out to several people to read, and most people read it within a day. That's one of the greatest compliments I've gotten as an author, is that it's one of those books you can get through in a day, because that's the kind of book I like to read, one that you just don't want to put down. You want to know how it ends. But it really ends, like you said, it ends with knowing your own legacy and what is it you want to leave behind. And if you can answer that question for yourself and work backwards, it'll really help you on your way to discovering your purpose.
Well, y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy so you can dive into more stories that we can't touch on now. Save the butter tubs. Discover your worth in a disposable world. Well, at the end of each chapter, Brenda, you have something that's called hashtag worth saving. What do you mean by hashtag worth saving?
Yes. I want the story to continue. I often laugh when I say I want to spread the message, you know, spread the message. But I do. I want to spread the message that we are worth saving. You're worth saving. You matter. You matter. And it's not based on, we're not human doings. We're human beings. It's not about what we do. It's about who we are. And so with that, I like to see people sharing quotes from the book and using the hashtag so I can go back and connect with them and other people can connect to each other way. And, you know, I have some t-shirts where it says hashtag worth saving, and it's a great conversation starter as well. But it's really that you are worth saving. Your legacy is worth saving. You as a soul is worth saving. And, you know, as a follower of Christ, I can help you that in that department too. If you don't know him and want to understand how he came to save you. But if you have a different belief system, there's still something there worth saving. And I want to tap into that and help people understand what that is. So every one of us is worth saving and has something inside of us that's worth saving that, we shouldn't let go of, you know, we shouldn't let go of those dreams that God planted there.
Amen. Well, I have to ask then this. Which hashtag worth saving speaks to your worth in a disposable world?
Oh, goodness. Which one in the back of the book? Well, I'll share the one that I refer to the most. And hopefully I can share without even crying. But the very last one in the book, it says, "I'm honored to grieve because I was blessed with great love." And before we got started today, I shared that we've lost two people in my family in the last 2 weeks. Not anybody I was particularly close to, but you could still, the other people in the family, like for instance, one is my my stepmother or my dad's wife. We were not close at all. And my dad, they got married shortly after my parents got divorced. So I was about 10 years old when they got married. And but we were never close. But they loved and lived together for 36 years. And so he is in great grief right now. But it brings me joy to know that he loved her that much and that she loved him that much, even though we didn't share that kind of relationship. And so it really is, you know, grief is horrible. It's not a fun thing to go through, but we go through it because we were honored with love. I mean, think about it. If it's a complete stranger that passes away, it's somebody that you didn't know or love, there's no grief there. You may grieve for somebody else grieving, but when you truly love someone, when you truly experience that love, like I did with my grandmother, especially towards the end when we were working on this project and she started pouring out all these stories, you know, the grief is real and grief never goes away. It changes. It's a process as well. And, but it's because we loved. And that's probably the quote from the book, one of the many that I quote the most, because so many people are going through that and experience grief. And I just try to remind people that the reason why you're feeling those feelings is because you experience love.
It is horrible how love has such power that it also brings such sorrow at the same time. And I just want to tell you, Brenda, we're praying with you in your loss, and I'm so sorry. That hurt is there, and it's a piece of us that's gone. But how beautiful that you can honor them by the love and even the writings in your book, knowing and sharing that in this world, everyone matters.
Yes, yes. And, you know, when you were speaking, it's really biblical, right? That the greatest love would bring a great grief. I mean, Jesus dying on a cross was a huge grief, but it was also done out of his greatest love for us. And so it really does come down to love, and that we're all worth loving and worth saving. And if we could just get a little bit more of that in our world and a little less comparison and jealousy and all the things we need to trash in the beginning of that book, we would be doing a lot better.
Amen, sister. Preach it. We'll just have to have you back because we could talk about, you know, so many other things, I know. And when your new book comes out, open invitation. Come back anytime.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd be glad to. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I know that people are going to want to connect with you. Where can they find you?
Sure. It's brendahair.com. And my last name is spelled like the hair on your head with an E on the end. BrendaHair.com. I always joke that my husband has none and I have a lot and it's always different. So if you have a copy of my book, you notice that it's shorter on the back of that book. It may be shorter again by the next book. I don't know yet. It may be a whole different color. There's no telling, but BrendaHair.com. So they can connect with me there. I'm on all social media platforms as well. I have a Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, and all of them, YouTube, the whole thing. So wherever they hang out, they can come hang out with me.
Fabulous. We will have all that information in the show notes so they can readily access it. Now, before I let you go, I have one final question for you. The series is called My Strength is My Story. Mm. What has your story gifted you?
Mm. Oh, my story has gifted me my worth. It really has. Going through this process has helped me understand who I am, who I'm called to be, and that all the other stuff doesn't matter. And so it's really gifted me my worth. And, you know, the scripture says in our greatest weakness, he is strong. In our weakness, he is strong. And my weakness was not realizing my worth, but he has made me strong and helped me understand who I am. So discovering my worth for sure.
And a beautiful worth that it is. Your heart beams with absolute joy and it's full with love. And I know your grandma is smiling right now.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.